know what I've been learning a little about? Suture.
Suture.
But I found out all about the different kinds. You know, they have permanent suture, and that there's dissolving suture.
Exactly what is your point, Lieutenant?
I'm not sure I have one. You going down?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast. It has been a couple of weeks since we last watchcasted. As far as you know, we're definitely not recording these out of order or in a different time frame than you are hearing. We absolutely just watched Columbo very recently, right, Brad Shoemaker and Vinnie Caravella?
Sure.
Just one more thing, Alex. Just,
Yes, Detective Caravella, what is it you want this time?
It seems like maybe you, My wife just listened to the Watchcast, and she says that you guys just record, you know, just record a thing. And sometimes I don't know about recording stuff, but sometimes you do things differently that you say if you do things. You ever notice that? Like, you know, ever have that happen?
Just notice one thing. You adjusted your microphone with your left hand.
Uh-huh. It's very astute of you to notice, Detective Caravella.
Now I'm going to murder you.
We are back with the Watchcast, and since we only had a couple of months or a couple of weeks here in September, I thought it'd be fun to do a little, just kind of, not technically a one-off, it's a two-off. We are watching a couple of episodes of Columbo, one of my all-time favorite TV detective things, and specifically we are watching episodes that are in the general, let's just call it wheelhouse, of Star Trek, which we just finished up. We are watching episodes that feature Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner. My power just blipped, so hopefully things will continue to be okay. Thankfully, the recording seems to have held. But yeah, like, Columbo, this is an institution of television, and my understanding is, Brad and Vinny, you have never really seen any of it before.
Zero.
I've caught it. Like, I have caught Murder, She Wrote, and, like, I have caught Perry Mason. Like, I have caught other...
Kojak.
Yeah, like, I've caught it on at maybe grandparents' houses, or it was, like, on the thing that came on if I had stayed up too late watching after school cartoons, right? And you're like,
yep,
hung out too long, and you're like, oh shit, Columbo's starting. I should go. So yeah, I don't think I've ever watched episodes all the way through. It was like in the realm of the A-Team. Like when I would watch the A-Team, a Columbo might come on next or something.
Sure. And there's like a cultural osmosis effect as well, where like he is genuinely, I think, one of the most notable TV characters ever produced by American television.
That's a grandiose claim.
I think he is, because I think the popularity of Columbo spanned multiple decades. It is definitively, I think, one of the most recognizable TV characters that the American television industry has ever produced. It has one of the most singular TV performances in Peter Falk's Columbo, and it has an absolute murderer's row, literally, of guest stars over the course of its many years and many, many iterations.
Also, like, the character of Columbo, interesting character, and again, this is just, a lot of this is osmosis or just references throughout the year. Some of this is just catching bits and pieces of... He's not hapless, but he's kind of hapless, but he's not. He's sharp. He's smart.
He's disarming.
He's disarming. Yeah. So there's the like, and then you get a lot of it in this episode, and I'm glad because it's like, it just seems to hit all the things I expect from Columbo of the like, yeah, this just doesn't make sense to me. Murderer. the guy who I clearly think is the murderer. This just doesn't, you know what? You got a good point. I will go back and go check this thing out. A lot of that, which is just charming.
It's a very charming performance, and I think that's kind of what sets Columbo apart from a lot of other TV detectives. It's something Angela Lansbury had in a different way in Murder, She Wrote, where there is just this very genial and sort of like pleasant quality to the person. And that in and of itself, I think, is very interesting juxtaposed against people who are committing violent murder.
I mean, when you put it in those terms, it's very much like the Jerry Orbach thing on Law and Order as well. Like, that's also what he had going on. I guess that is kind of an archetype in crime investigation.
There's a fed-upness to Jerry Orbach, I feel like, that maybe Columbo does not have, except at maybe one point in this episode. But generally speaking, you know, like, I feel like Jerry Orbach went a lot harder.
I have a little bit of Columbo lore I'm curious about, since we won't get to all of it.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to use this particular episode to kind of establish kind of what Columbo is, how it came into be, and sort of what its general vibe is. Because we're not going through the entire season or series. There are technically 10 seasons of this show, though a lot of them are spread out over multiple decades, And they were also only doing a handful of episodes every year because these are not, traditionally speaking, TV seasons. They are not 22 episode seasons. They are TV movies that would appear multiple times a year.
Yeah, that's like my first question is like what kind of time slot this aired in, because this episode without any breaks is an hour and 13 minutes, which is just kind of a weird, was it a 90 minute? 90 minutes seems too short for the number of commercials they'd want to run.
I think in the 70s, the commercial breaks were slightly shorter than they were when we were growing up.
Okay.
But yes, so let's talk about first the genesis of Columbo and where it came from, and then I will explain kind of the format and why it is the way it is. So it started out, it was created by these two producers, Richard Levinson and William Link. They were just aspiring screenwriters in the 1960s, had worked on a handful of shows and radio plays and other things. But there was a fairly infamous writer's strike in the early 60s, and I think it was actually in 1960. And so one of the loopholes that writers at that time, like that allowed them to work while that strike was going on, was to write for live television. That was not covered the same way that, like, you know, scripted television was. So the first appearance of Columbo is on a live television show, the 1960 anthology series, The Chevy Mystery Show. The character was invented by them as just a one-off detective story that I think was loosely based on a short story that they had written for a, you know, what, like some pulp crime magazine or something. And so that episode was called Enough Rope. The original version of Columbo was played by a different actor named Bert Fried, which is a great 60s actor name. And he definitely looks like it. Haircut you could set a watch by. And generally speaking, the only thing that was kind of similar was the rumpled suit and the cigar. A lot of the mannerisms and sort of like character traits that we know as Columbo were not in that original teleplay. So that episode aired. That teleplay is now, I believe, in some sort of like television history museum as kind of first appearance of Columbo. But so I guess Levinson and Link at some point like decided they had something with this character and kind of wanted to try doing more with it. So the original story, the one that became the original TV movie of Columbo, actually started out as a stage play that was staged in San Francisco in 1962. Oscar-winning actor Thomas Mitchell played Columbo in that, alongside Joseph Cotten and Agnes Moorehead. And that one is basically the plot of the original TV movie Prescription Murder.
Okay.
And that TV movie did not come around until 1968.
And is that when we get Peter Falk?
That is when Peter Falk first debuts as the character. They had talked about a couple of other actors. Specifically, I believe they pitched it to Lee Cobb and Bing Crosby, of all people.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Now, in 68, I believe Peter Falk was around 40 years old or so, maybe a little bit older, which was technically younger than they had written the character. But when the script got into his hands, apparently Peter Falk's whole thing was, I would kill to play that TV cop.
Great.
It was like the whole like disheveled, kind of slightly detached, like the vibe of the character. Was that there from the beginning or did he add that?
So he added a lot of it. There were certain things in there that definitely kind of found the just one more thing aspect of the character. Was a total accident that ended up in one of the screenplays, I think maybe in the original one, because the writers were like, we ended a scene too early and we needed to find a way to get Columbo back into the scene. So we had him do the just one more thing, and then we realized that's great and we just kept doing it. But a lot of the other mannerisms and sort of like, you know, random asides that sort of come out of Columbo when he's in a scene, a lot of that stuff just came from Peter Falk. Literally, his wardrobe came from Peter Falk. He brought his own clothes to the set. That is his raincoat that he is wearing in just about every episode of Columbo.
Huh.
Amazing.
Man's a hell of an actor.
That raincoat has to be in some museum, right?
I would think so, yeah. So, after the 68 TV movie, Prescription Murder, which did very well, and there's a couple of little differences in that one in the character. Columbo is a lot more sharp and driven in that one than he is kind of in every other Columbo. He's a little bit more animated and a little bit more, I don't know, I would just say more like a younger detective than he is in just about every other Columbo, where he's constantly distracted and, you know, sort of talking around whatever's going on. But otherwise, it's basically that character. He's wearing a slightly nicer suit in that one, too. But it was the number one thing in the Nielsen ratings when it aired. And they were like, oh, we got to turn this into a series. The problem was Peter Falk didn't want to do a TV series. He had been on a show before, hated the amount of time it took up, and his film career was starting to take off around this time.
Hmm.
So the compromise was, let's do another TV movie, which ended up, I think it was a couple of years after this. That was, again, number one in the ratings when it aired. That one, I believe, was called, hang on, let me pull it up, Ransom for a Dead Man, which featured Lee Grant, and that's also a great one. And so that one doing so well, what they came to ultimately was, we're not going to get 22 episodes a year out of Peter Falk. Not going to happen. So NBC came up with this idea of what they call a wheel show. What that means is that every month, four different series would rotate through the same time slot. They were all detective mysteries of different stripes. McMillan and Wife was one of the shows. There were a couple of other ones. And so one week out of the month, it would be Columbo. And then the rest of the weeks, another one of those shows would rotate in, sort of like a movie of the week, but it is very specifically this NBC detective fiction thing.
Sunday, see a double feature mystery movie. First, McMillan.
I suppose you care to tell me who was the target.
It's you, Commissioner.
Then McCloud goes to Russia.
You know, you're going to Yalta to pick up a bag of heroin.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
And if I know it, you know that the secret police know it.
McMillan and McCloud, Sunday, starting at 8, 7 Central on NBC.
Smart.
Yeah, kind of a cool it's idea.
Smart to yeah. define the time slot by genre, like you, especially as kind of interchangeable as detective procedural type shows can be.
Like, yeah.
There's a pretty good chance that people tuning in at that time for that kind of thing are going to be relatively happy with whatever it is.
Totally. And people loved Columbo kind of from the jump. So that, and like I think three out of the four shows in that sort of like wheel time slot did very well in that time slot. And a lot of people say those shows were probably better than they had any right to be because the people who were producing them had a lot more time to write and produce the episodes than they would if they were doing a weekly series.
Hmm.
Now, granted, they're longer episodes, but it didn't really matter. So they did about, I think, seven episodes of the first season in a Wednesday time slot. And then in the second season, they moved everything to Sunday. And that is where it stayed through the rest of the 1970s, which is where the series eventually ended, more or less. But then, 10 years later, they brought it back again, mostly as TV movies of the week. That is generally how they were presented after that. But from 89 to 2003, they did another bunch of Columbo episodes. And in fact, Peter Falk was talking about doing even another one all the way up to 2007. But then I think his health got bad and just never came to fruition.
Hmm.
But Peter Falk is unmistakably the face of this thing. He has been Columbo for like in every televised version outside of that original Chevy mystery show thing. And I would go so far as to say that is probably his most singular performance. I mean, I love Peter Falk. He's in a lot of other great movies and other roles, but I don't think there's anything I associate more with him than Columbo.
Well, did his star kind of take off after Columbo? Was he being cast in movies on the...
I'd say his star was already kind of there. It's just that this became his signature thing.
Okay.
He wasn't like super well known, but definitely Columbo, I think, became the thing that made him like very visible to, let's just say, an entire generation of Americans, probably like our parents and grandparents mostly.
That made him an American icon.
Yeah.
You know, like looking at the list, he did like a dozen movies in the 70s. So, you know, he was working for sure, but not like constantly.
Okay.
And good movies too. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Mikey and Nikki, but that's a great one.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, so he did all of this Columbo, and Columbo has had a long cultural shadow. The show was obviously very popular in the United States, but it was also extremely popular in Europe. There is a possibly apocryphal story or not that during during some unrest in the Soviet Union, when this stuff was airing in like Romania, I guess people in Romania loved Columbo so much that when the show was originally announced to be canceled in the 70s, there was some kind of like someone was worried there was going to be riots in Romania. I think there may have been bigger problems going on, who can say, but one thing that is true is that there is apparently a video message that was recorded from Peter Falk to the people of Romania that was included in some kind of larger diplomatic cable that went out to the people of Romania from the United States. So whether they were actually on the verge of riots, I don't know, but he did record that thing. That is true.
That seems to be lost media.
Yeah, I don't think that has actually been seen anywhere.
It looks like there is a bit of an effort to find that footage of him addressing the country of Romania.
I would like to see this as well. Columbo is also extremely popular in Japan. You know, quirky detective character, popular in Japan, big surprise. But the ways in which Columbo became very popular is kind of wild because, so one non-canonical thing is that there is a character in the Lupin series. You all are familiar with Lupin the Third, right?
Yep.
I think he only shows up in one or two things, but there is literally a character who is a child detective named more or less Son of Columbo. He is a kid in a trench coat that looks like Columbo and rides a skateboard.
Great.
Also, for a long time, the only way you could get a high-def version of Columbo was to order a 1080i Blu-ray release that was Japan only. It came in a big cigar box, and it was, for the longest time, it was the only way you could get this show in high-def. They just finally put out a U.S. release in 1080p like 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's been on streaming for a long time, and my understanding is that once it kind of hit streaming in a big way, like, it became a whole new generation of people sort of caught on with the show.
Amazing.
Did you guys have family members that liked Columbo or watched it?
Columbo was on and about.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially because, again, in 88 or 89 is when they brought it back, and I do remember a couple of those TV movies of the week airing at my grandparents' house. They were a big Murder, She Wrote house and just TV detective shows in general. And so I remember watching a couple of those then.
Like, again, I know enough about Columbo to have drifted through and to have at least two questions. If you can suffer my questions.
By all
on
means,
Columbo,
this is the time to do it.
Do they ever show Columbo's wife?
No,
never. Okay.
Well, okay. So there's a slight technicality on this.
Okay.
In the 80s, they spun up a show called Mrs. Columbo. Guess who was Mrs. Columbo, Brad Shoemaker?
Oh, no.
Captain Janeway.
It's got to be somebody from Star Trek. That is not who I would have guessed, because she would have been pretty young then.
Yeah, this is a fairly early Kate Mulgrew performance. It lasted for one season and is generally considered non-canonical.
Okay. Second question. I don't think I've ever heard somebody say Columbo's name. Is his first name Lieutenant? Because I don't know if I've ever heard anybody say his name.
There is a first name. We don't know what it is.
Wow.
It's never said.
Great. I respect
Amazing.
That.
The,
it's
throughout
either
the
Detective
entire
or Lieutenant
run?
Columbo. It's all they call him.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if your name's Columbo, why do anything else?
Yeah. No, my wife, Columbo, these are the mysteries. Does he even have a wife? Is a genuine question that people have been asking for years. Is he just using that as a disarming technique to talk to people? Or does he really have a wife?
Or to show up to work late?
Yeah. I'm of the opinion that the wife is real, but I think some of the stories he tells about the wife are not real.
Okay. Those are the cultural things that I vaguely remember. Like, never hearing anybody say, like, Eddie Columbo or, you know,
no.
John Columbo and his wife.
Other than the frumpled suit, the shabby clothes, the cigars, and the mystery wife, the big trademark things are he has that one really shitty car, which he is driving the entire series, by the way. It is the same car the whole time.
Great.
He frequently refers to a nephew that seems to always be getting up to some manner of caper. And he has a dog eventually. They get him a big basset hound at some point, who is the droopiest dog you've ever seen in your life. That is not here, sadly, in A Stitch in Crime, but the dog's great.
Okay.
But, you know, the general vibe is always Columbo shows up, he's a mess in some form or another. You will always see the killing happen before Columbo ever shows up on air. That was in the stage play, too. Like,
yeah, that took me aback.
The seeing the murder part?
Yeah, I've seen other detective shows where they just straight up show the murder right at the top, but it feels very against convention these days to just very blatantly show you the truth right at the beginning.
So Law & Order Criminal Intent used to do that, and that was kind of the one thing that made it a little novel from the other ones, is that they told you basically who the murderer was right from the jump. And so with this is how it was in the stage play, too. And what they found, because Columbo was not technically the star of that play. Columbo was a character in it, and a primary one, but like, he was technically third billing in that original version. And apparently the audience was going nuts for the character, like he would get on stage and they would applaud for him, and then like the two stars would come out and they would get less applause.
Mm.
So they were like, we have something with this character.
Mm. All right. I have to, there's an amazing line in the Wikipedia article about this show in reference to this structure of showing you the murder.
Give it to me.
The style of mystery is sometimes referred to as a how catch 'em in contrast to the traditional whodunit.
Oh, see, I think that's pretty good.
I love that. That's good terminology.
Ash, how catch 'em.
Yeah. I mean, I think Columbo, at least in this full episode that we're about to talk about,
mm-hmm.
the idea that this seemingly hapless, but actually on the inside guy just appeals to the every person, right? Like,
yeah.
Because in this particular episode too, Nimoy plays a real ass.
Yes.
Who thinks he's smarter than everyone. And like, this guy is like, it just feels like getting one over on your boss, right? Like, it feels like totally. Getting one over on the man. And I think Columbo does a good job of making you feel like, you don't have me. I've had you the whole time.
Yeah. And I just, before we get into the actual episode itself and this week's guest star, I just need to mention that, again, a wild amount of talent went through this show over the course of its entire runtime. The original first season premiere, Murder by the Book, was written by Stephen Bochco of big TV
wow.
fame
yeah.
and directed by Steven Spielberg.
All right.
I've heard of him.
Jonathan Demme also did an episode that season. Jonathan Latimer wrote some. Actor Ben Gazzara directed a couple of episodes. And then as far as like guest stars, I mean, it basically name a big star of the 1970s that would do television. They were probably on there at some point, some multiple times. Like Patrick McGoohan did like five different episodes as various killers. Jack Cassidy and Robert Culp also came around for multiple runs. Leslie Nielsen has appeared in multiple episodes.
Martin Landau.
Yep. There's a great Martin Landau one.
Donald Pleasance.
The Donald Pleasance one might be one of my all-time favorites.
Was Jonathan Winters in one?
No, Jonathan Winters did not.
They got Johnny Cash?
Yep. Another one of my favorites.
Is Jose Ferrer related to Miguel Ferrer?
That's his dad.
Okay. Yeah, figured.
There's a Ricardo Montalban one.
Wow. All right. Dick Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm. In the 80s, I think George Wendt was one of them.
Okay. Yeah.
Do they always play the villain, or they're just guest stars in any capacity?
I think Leslie Nielsen did not play a killer. I think he was just sort of like in a related important character, but I think he's one of the only big stars that didn't play a murderer.
Okay. Oh, what? Hang on. Mm-hmm. Clive Revel. Hang on.
Yes.
That name.
What's the name?
I want to make sure I'm not. Yep. Okay. Yes. This is probably a pretty deep cut.
Okay.
Clive Revel played a villain in one of these. Any guesses?
Mm-mm.
That's the voice of the Emperor in The Empire Strikes Back.
Great.
The first.
Oh, hell yeah.
The first actor to voice Emperor Palpatine in a Star Wars was also a villain on Columbo.
That's great.
Fuck yeah, he was. I wouldn't have known that was that guy until you said it. So now I know. That was a late 70s one, too. But yeah, so let's talk about this episode here in a second. We will be talking about A Stitch in Crime, Season 2, Episode 6, co-starring Leonard Nimoy. But first, I think we should take a quick break and just get into the mystery in earnest from there. We will be right back. All right, we're back to the podcast. And you know, the thing is, sometimes you do a show so many times, you stop thinking about the format and you stop thinking about the things that you do regularly. And you know, occasionally the mind it wanders. And I forgot, you know, to talk about like the writer and the director and some of the various actors that appear in this episode. You know, my wife tells me I got to work on remembering these kind of things, but it turns out I actually totally forgot to do any of that before we did the break. I'm going to talk about the actors as we come to them in the episode. I do just want to very briefly mention this episode. A Stitch in Crime was written and directed by people with two great names. The writer, Sherrill Hendricks.
Okay.
The director, High Averback.
Okay.
Both of these people I would describe as journeymen in their trade. Like one episode writers and directors of a lot of different TV shows, primarily. As I said, some big names have worked on this show. These are not the most notable ones, but they still turn in, I think, a pretty great episode of Columbo. And a big part of that is our central performance. The reason we are doing this episode, Leonard Nimoy as one of the just skeeviest psychopathic motherfuckers you will ever see on this particular show.
This is a good proof of concept to me that, how can I put it, the actor can really disappear into the role when they're good enough.
Yeah.
You know, like there are definitely a lot of cases. I mean, this is a great case, in fact, where he is so identifiable as Spock that you almost go into this going like, I'm not going to be able to take this seriously because I'm just going to see Spock every time I look at him. That lasts about 30 seconds, I feel like.
Like one conversation and you're like, this is a totally different performance. The only thing they really share in common is that little bit of like cold and calculatingness.
And I think also, like you said, this guy is a psychopath.
Yeah.
This guy.
A climber, a schemer.
Oh man. Like just murder spree.
He is determined to be the most notable doctor that he possibly can be. This is Dr. Barry Mayfield, a cardiac surgeon and research surgeon who is working alongside Dr. Edmund Heidemann, played by Will Greer.
Have you given any more thought to making an announcement?
Hmm? Oh, there's no need to, really. No real hurry.
Well, there are already rumors around that we're very close to solving the transplant rejection problem. I've had people ask me for the name of the drug we're developing to counteract rejection.
Oh, don't let that bother you.
Then, of course, Breckman and his group might beat us to it.
Oh, so that's a real problem, huh? Who gets the credit?
No, I just think we've done enough testing, that's all.
Listen, I'd like nothing better than for you to go in and give the real operation now. But I do think we need further tests.
Do either of you recognize this actor at all?
Nope.
No, maybe. Like,
I don't expect you to necessarily. I was just curious.
Maybe from something, but maybe also where he plays like somebody's lovable grandpa.
That's exactly what he did.
Okay.
Specifically, he played Grandpa Zebulon Zeb Walton on the TV series The Waltons from 1972 until he died in 1978.
Okay. Well, that's his vibe here.
Yeah.
He could also play a very flustered Santa Claus who gets trapped in New York City or something.
Totally. And in real life, he could play an actual communist because he was a member of the American Communist Party and, in fact, was blacklisted for a period because he would not name names.
All right.
Wow. Grandpa Zebulon doesn't fucking rat.
Grandpa Zeb is behind the workers.
That's right.
And, you know, this character, the Dr. Heidemann here, is definitely an extremely different personality type from Mayfield, where he is cold and calculating. This guy seems like the fucking weird great uncle that shows up at the family reunion and has candy for all the kids.
Yeah, and in just terms of this episode, right, he's also the guy who believes that, like, hey, it's about getting it right, not getting the fame, not getting it early. It's not about the credit. It's about doing this right. And they're researching, and they're doing transplant research, right?
Yeah, I believe what they are working on is some kind of drug or procedure that is intended to greatly reduce the likelihood of organ rejection during transplant.
Yeah.
And they seem to have very good results, but, you know, there's also a rival medical concern that is also working on similar research. They are still engaging in long-term testing, and Heidemann absolutely believes they need at least another year of testing.
Actually, I think it's the German team that says they need another year of
testing. That's right, yeah. But I think so Heidemann kind of agrees.
That's where, is it Mayfield?
Yes. Mayfield gets the telegram.
Yeah, that's where Mayfield sees his opportunity is he's like, oh, the Germans are going to do another year of tests. We can get in there and get it first now.
Mm-hmm. This is publisher. Let's get out there and show. They actually, he wants to do the transplant, right? He's not even like wants to publish.
He wants to do a human test finally.
Yeah. But yeah, our good doctor here. Maybe he doesn't have that year on his ticker left.
No.
He needs some work.
Nimoy is not far removed from the Star Trek we've been watching here, right? Like 3-4 years?
Yeah, this is 72, I believe. Right?
Yeah, that's what the credits said at the beginning.
And 69 is the last year that Star Trek ran.
Okay, so this is basically still Star Trek era Nimoy?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, he's definitely done other work. I think this is around the same time that the Invasion of the Body Snatchers remake that he's in is in as well. But this is also around the time that I think this is somewhere in the period where Spock mania has not completely died. There is that one Leonard Nimoy solo album that I think came out during the course of Trek.
I was just Googling about this a little bit, if I can digress for a second.
Please do.
What I Googled was Leonard Nimoy, Bilbo Baggins.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Because in my mind, this is his like Lord of the Rings album hair.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's actually the case, though. I don't think he's actually, from what I could find, he's not this shaggy on his kind of record appearances.
More of a bowl than a shag, yeah, so, in the record appearance.
So that's what I was going to say, actually. All of the photos I could find of him related to his music releases kind of just look like Spock, and it made me wonder, did he become a prisoner of the bowl cut? Like, did he have to keep using that hair because it was so recognizable that it was like, it was, I wonder if he just felt like it was going to help his album sales if he just looked like Spock all the time, and so he kind of like had to keep the hair probably against his will.
I mean, I don't know how much it was against his will, but there was definitely, because I think the first album came out while he was still on Star Trek, and there was, you know, the whole Spock mania thing, like, it was kind of a double-edged sword for him. Like, obviously it allowed him a lot of career opportunities, but at the same time, he was very worried about being typecast. It's why he almost didn't come back for season two.
Maybe he just, maybe that hair is just really tough to fix if you fuck it up.
True.
You know, maybe mid-season, you're not changing that hair.
But you're right. He is a bit shaggier here, but no more, no less, you know, calculating and intense than Spock, just in a very different personality type. And he sees an opportunity, as you said. Heidemann's heart, not so great. He is due to go in for a valve replacement surgery, which Mayfield is, in fact, going to conduct himself. He is a very talented cardiac surgeon, if nothing else. And what he has devised after his conversation with Heidemann is that he's going to find a way to kill him.
Yeah. So before we get too far into this, just kind of on a Columbo structure thing here.
Sure.
You know, we talked about them just basically laying out the beats for the crime, right?
Yes.
Like they're not hiding anything. But also, I don't know if I loved the little sequence of almost like a trailer at the beginning. The like, hey, here are scenes you're gonna see later if you keep watching this. I not that they're spoilery or anything.
They're really not.
But they almost give away too much in terms of, I mean, I'm sure you would have just guessed this in a coming up next week, you know, on Columbo, here's the thing. But, you know, they really show some of the scenes with Nimoy being kind of a dick already.
I definitely agree.
They color your expectations for sure. Like I kind of wouldn't have minded if that had been edited out of this release.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say. This is actually one of the only episodes where I think that thing does get in the way a little bit, because there is a difference in how Columbo approaches this character versus a lot of the other murderers on the show.
Mm.
There is usually like one of two ways he goes about it. Like there's a certain chemistry between him and the killer. Like he clearly knows this person is a murderer. He's going to arrest them. But he doesn't hate them. Like, he doesn't have that vibe of, like, intense dislike of that person. Like, he almost respects, like, their mind in a way before he eventually takes them down. Or someone that straight up fucking offends his sensibilities as a human being. And this is actually the first episode I remember in the order where Columbo didn't have at least a little bit of repartee with the murderer. He seems to absolutely hate this guy from the second he gets there. And showing that scene where he yells at Mayfield, I think is actually a little too much of a giveaway of the difference in this story.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yes. He like loses it. But yeah, the, Nimoy's character here, Mayfield, is a real son of a gun.
He's a bastard.
He's so
straight
bad.
Up.
But I do think creatively, this is an interesting way to murder someone.
It is. It's a good plan if you're a heart surgeon. It's not one most people could pull off.
Yeah, like, is it a good plan? It's creative.
It's a good plan that gets bad the second it gets complicated.
Yeah. All right. So the doctor needs this heart transplant. Basically, the setup, right, is the main doctor who's head of the research.
It's a valve replacement.
Valve replacement.
Yeah, sorry, valve replacement. And Mayfield is going to do the operation, but wants to do this. Wants all the credit and wants this research to move forward as quickly as possible.
Yes.
So he needs to get rid of this old man doctor who's the head, who's beloved in this hospital.
Everybody loves him except Mayfield.
Especially this nurse who becomes one of the main problems with this plan.
Yes, and, our first actual murder victim.
And so we don't really know the way he's going to murder him. We just kind of know he's going to murder him on the operating table, which is a good piece of TV because you're sitting there with the nurse. The nurse also thinks some funny business is up, And you're just waiting for something to happen, right? Like, there's a lot of sideways glances during this operating scene.
I mean, she does not trust him. Let's talk about the nurse here very briefly. Nurse Sharon Martin, played here by Anne Francis, fairly well-known actress from the 50s and the 60s. Most notably, she was in the fairly well-regarded sci-fi film from the 50s, Forbidden Planet, with Leslie Nielsen. She then mostly went on to a TV career after that, but like was working regularly kind of all the way up into the 90s. And her character does not trust Mayfield whatsoever. She even expresses this to Heidemann a couple of times. And it's just like, I don't know about this guy, man. He seems like a real striver. You know, he seems like real intense about getting the credit for things. And Heidemann's just like, oh, you, it's fine. He's a good doctor. Like, how bad could he be?
When I went back to get your glasses, I'm sure he was reading your telegram.
Now, Sharon, I know you dislike Dr. Mayfield, but that's no reason
Dr. Mayfield is an opportunist. He's been taking half credit for a project that you've been on since the very beginning, and he's not going to sit still for another doctor.
Sharon, I am disappointed in you. He is a very brilliant surgeon and is of great help to me in my project. I don't want to hear any more about it.
I'm sorry, Doctor.
Besides, if he wasn't such a brilliant surgeon, I wouldn't have him operate on me, would I?
And she saw that he saw the note or the telegram.
Yes. And so the telegram was for Heidemann. It was not for him.
Yeah. And so zero trust here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a tense operating scene and a lot of eyeballs. But there is also that one guy that you feel like is going to be in on this, you know, the other guy at the operating table.
Yes. The only one they cut to a close up of ever.
Yeah, making eyeballs. Is there something weird with him, or is it just
okay? He's just another guy who is very intensely into the surgery.
Yeah.
Well, so here's I think you touched on something here that is very specifically Columbo, which is that you're watching this scene, you're seeing how they're going through the motions. And this, even though this is not the murder of the episode, one of the key things in all the murders in just about every Columbo episode is that the thing to watch for is little details in what in the motions that the killer is going through, both during and after the murder, like little things that wouldn't necessarily register when you're watching the first time around. But then when Columbo brings it up later, you're like, oh, right, he did do that. Oh, right. He did make that call or something like that. And so here, you don't know what he's doing. You know he's going to do something funny with the surgery, but you don't know what it is. And it really is just by the grace of God that she happens to find that extra suture lying around at the end and after the surgery and starts to put two and two together and realize, oh, this ain't right.
Yeah, she can feel from, like she says, she's familiar with suture and this suture ain't right. Whatever's going on here, she doesn't quite know what's up with it, but this something's off here.
Yeah, it's not the kind of suture they normally use in this kind of surgery, at the very least.
Tell me the truth, Sharon. What's bothering you?
What is this?
That's suture. If I remember correctly, we do use suture to sew up in operations. May I see it?
It's suture, all right. But I didn't bring this in on the operating tray. And I've handled enough suture to know what it feels like. This doesn't feel right.
Sharon, I don't understand. What's this all about?
If Dr. Heidemann dies, you take over the research project. You do your own transplant operating, and you get full credit.
Do you realize what you're saying?
Dr. Heidemann survived the operation. What if you've done something during the operation that may cause him to die?
Sharon, I know you're not very fond of me. But I never realized you were so obsessive. If I were you, I'd have that suture checked out. If you're so sure that I've done something that's going to make lovable old Heidemann suddenly drop dead in a few days, I'm sure the police would love to know about it. I suggest you take your suspicions to them. But before you lose yourself in your hysteria, would you please mark and file these bottles and put them in the cooler tray?
I got some dissolving sutures not 3 weeks ago, actually, and they are gone now.
Well, in the immediate aftermath, it seems like Heidemann is fine, but the nurse is very uncomfortable with something and these sutures and is stewing in the office trying to think about whether to confront Mayfield about this or not. And eventually he just kind of forces her hand because he can kind of sense that, like, something's up.
Yeah, and he's like, call the cops. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Enough of this. Like, you've been riding me all freaking day. What do you want from me?
Like, what exactly, what evidence do you have? What is it you think I did?
Like, shit or get off the pot. What are we doing here? I'm going back home. Make sure you put whatever you want to sort these bottles, whatever.
Yeah. Now, the question I have is, when she makes the phone call, do you think he knows exactly who she's calling? Or do you think it's just like, doesn't matter who she's calling, it's bad for me?
What is that when she's setting up the chemist appointment that we find out about later?
Yes.
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because otherwise, Nimoy's character Mayfield would have killed them also.
Probably. Would have blown up that building.
This dude is off the rails.
Yeah. Because this is, look, again, I think his plan for murdering Heidemann is relatively smart given the position he's in and what he can do. He did not think through the murder of this nurse particularly well. It's thoughtful in some ways, but it's also the wrong kind of murder for how he's setting it up.
Yeah, he's like very, very sly with this attempted murder with the sutures. And then after that, he's like blunt force on the rest of these. Yeah.
Because this is hands-on murder, and that's not what he's intending to do.
Yeah, also like impossible in a world with closed circuit cameras all over the place 10 to 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is just in the middle of a still relatively crowded parking garage.
He does a couple of things where I'm like, I didn't even think of the closed circuit TV. I was just thinking even more of like any witness would have.
Also, yeah.
A couple of times he does these things. I'm just like, dude, somebody walking out of a car, somebody walking out of a building, this guy would be made immediately.
It is supposed to be very late at night, but.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. There's another one at the apartment building where he just walks out of an apartment building. Also, a little dicey. Yeah, where you're just like, dude, somebody with an open window. But that's not why we're here. We're here to see this man murder.
Yes, and he does more times than most murderers on this show, honestly. I think his actual body count is higher than most.
And I do like her when he does come up in his like very stern look. It's like very intimidating. She does that like, what the fuck's going on here?
What are you doing?
Like, what? Her face just like looks like my wife when I'm like, did you pick up? Do you have the dog?
Uh-huh.
Wait, what are we talking about?
No, I'm just gonna hit you with a tire iron. That's all I'm here to do.
She looks so confused. Does the show generally shy away from any graphic stuff, even like blood splatter and stuff? There's like really nothing.
You'll see a little blood here and there, like you'll see a person go down with a gunshot wound, but it's not graphic really.
Okay.
The murder scene, I don't know. There are bits and pieces of this that maybe by modern standards feel a little clumsy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or like some of the editing and direction, just, I don't know.
I'll say it again. This is not the most story director this show ever gets.
Hmm.
You know, it's a little, like I said, it's a little workmanlike, but I think the performances and the overall script, like, keep it afloat.
That's fair.
But I do appreciate that this, like, in a modern crime drama, you got a lot more prosthetic corpses, people on autopsy tables, the blood sprays across the window kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is pretty tame by those standards. And I'm kind of happy for it. I could watch this with the kids or anybody and not, it's a family show.
It's network TV standards. It's a
family murder
70s,
show.
You know, like they can't really, I mean, again, juxtapose this against the very last Columbo, which was 2003. And that one is shot like a CSI episode and definitely has like a little bit more of the violence going on, though it's still pretty tame by like 2003 standards. Like, it does shift with the times a little bit, but it never becomes a particularly graphic or violent show.
Yeah. So the worst we get here is like the handbag getting spilled on the floor, right?
Yeah.
Is your, I'm dead.
I don't know. The psychedelic freakout death later on is almost more disturbing in a way, but
that one is weird.
But yeah, so all we see is that he goes through the handbag after she's dead, and then the next day, we are back in the parking garage, and enter Detective Lieutenant Columbo.
Who's the victim?
Name is Sharon Martin, a nurse at the hospital.
Is there any coffee around?
Haven't seen any.
How long has she been dead?
Looks like several hours. Another nurse found her on the way into work this morning. Hey, you look tired.
I am. My wife's not feeling too good. Stomach trouble or something. She'll be all right. In the meantime, I'm dead. I was up half the night. Did I ask you for coffee?
Yeah. Lieutenant?
Yeah.
Sir, we're trying to keep this area clean for evidence.
Oh, sorry.
you know, enter is a very strong word here. Stumble.
Shuffling in is Lieutenant Columbo.
I'm assuming. So this is, we're in season two at this point, right?
Yes, in the sixth episode of the second season.
I'm assuming that this, for regular Columbo viewers, is kind of a funny, jokey, expected bit of Columbo. Looks like he just woke up and is coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So
there's kind of goof.
There's usually in one of these some kind of through line thing that is either bothering or plaguing Columbo, you know, indigestion, you know, like like things going on with his family, whatever. There's always something that's like that he's presenting as making him a little off. Sometimes it seems more genuine than others. But here, I mean, like, this is just a variation on the thing they do every time, which is he shuffles in. He's very tired. He wants to eat his hard boiled egg.
Does he want to eat a hard boiled egg usually?
No, it's just this time he has the egg.
Yeah.
Well, he really wants his coffee, but no one has it for him.
Yeah, right. And sorry, since this is our first Columbo here, mm-hmm. my first Columbo, he is a well-respected detective.
Very much so.
What I was expecting. I thought it was going to be a little bit more of, I feel like in the modern trope, you know, there's friction between the cops and the beat cops and the detective or, you know.
Yeah, I don't think you ever see a superior in this whole episode, do you?
No, just other detectives in this one.
And they seem to like him.
Yeah.
Or at a minimum, like, tolerate his nonsense, you know, like, he's dropping eggshell everywhere and they just kind of politely ask him to stop.
I would say that there are a few episodes that I can think of off the top of my head where there are superior police officers, because a lot of the people he's busting are extremely wealthy and powerful people.
Mm.
Like, this character is actually pretty low on the power scale, but, like, high on the psychopathy scale. You know, like, a lot of the people who kill on this show are just rich idiots that are upset about something. And then kind of have to work backward from getting out of that. But
a lot sometimes
they will apply pressure. Like, they will say, hey, I don't want to be bothered by this detective anymore. There's one where Hector Elizondo plays, I think, like a Middle Eastern diplomat, where he is constantly putting pressure on the government to be like, can you get this police detective off my back? I have diplomatic immunity, for God's sakes.
Uh-huh.
And that episode ends with him annoying him so much that he's literally willing to give up diplomatic immunity if it means he doesn't get sent back to his home country. And also he can get away from Columbo.
He's the master of his craft.
He is. But so immediately the things that he kind of seizes on here as he's looking at the body is not much. It's just, you know, I think they find the keys for the apartment, if I remember correctly. And the spilled handbag.
I think Nimoy's got the keys.
That's right. Nimoy has the keys. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I think the most you get is like the handbag contents are in a
And they say the keys bag. Are missing. That's what it is. Yes. They say the keys aren't there.
Yeah. And then cut to Nimoy with the keys.
Yes. Skulking outside this apartment building in broad daylight, I should imagine.
Again. No witnesses.
Yeah. I mean, he's going during work hours, so I assume that he just assumes that no one will be paying attention. But here's where I think first, committing this murder was not a great first step in getting away with the other murder he's trying to commit. But this is where I think he really screws up, because he does not do a good job tossing the victim's apartment to make it look like a break-in, because he's being too careful.
It needs some more prints or something like that.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, we come back to it later, but, like, you know, the way he's tossing the apartment isn't like someone is actually looking for something. It's like he's trying to make it look like someone was looking for something.
He's got to learn, you know, it's his first toss, his first murders.
Yeah. But that's the thing. He's okay at thinking through like a sort of complicated murder in his wheelhouse. But the second he has to do like make it look like just a regular crime, he doesn't know what he's doing.
It's a very 70s apartment.
We should talk as much as we can about the interiors on this show, because it is one of the most notable things about Columbo.
It's a lot of Harvest Gold in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things. Are they seat cushions that just look like giant tribbles out of Star Trek?
Yeah.
They're like, okay.
Fair amount of this decor is pretty similar to the decor of the house I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Was your house built in the 70s?
It was built in the 70s.
There you go.
In fact, it was built right around either the same year or very shortly after this episode aired.
Nice.
Yeah, the interiors on this show are borderline depraved at times. And I mean that in the rich opulence of the 1970s. So you can imagine what some of those interiors look like. I don't know if we're going to get the best of that in the two episodes we're doing. But if you go further into the series, you will see some amazing mansion setups and like rich people living rooms, and the most depraved interior I've ever seen. In one episode, the bathroom with a carpet around its tub.
Oh, don't do that. That's,
there are steps leading up to the tub and they are carpeted.
Oh,
that's disgusting.
That's pretty bad.
That's yeah. Bad. But so he's tossing this apartment to make it look like a break-in, obviously. And Columbo is still going through, you know, kind of the thing. They can't find coffee for him, so they bring him orange juice. And then eventually he starts skulking around the hospital looking to talk to some of, you know, the nurse's cohort. And we get to see Leonard Nimoy do his best. Oh, my God, I can't believe she's dead.
Hello, Alex, Dr. Mayfield. From my 10 o'clock surgery, would you order up? Postponed? Why? Sharon? No. No, I haven't heard that. They found her dead. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no. When did that happen?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he's putting it on so thick in this that I feel like you could have arrested him on pure suspicion before this was over.
Mm-hmm. But there's always this moment in Columbo where, like, the killer has to at least pretend like they weren't there or didn't know what had happened. Sometimes, like, they have a very specific alibi they've set up. Other times, it's just, you know, hey, happenstance, whatever. But in this case, he's got to pretend like, no, I wasn't the one who brained that woman. And then in comes strolling Columbo.
Sorry. Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I have so much trouble trying to find my way around hospitals. You know, there's so many wings. There's the north wing and the south wing and the east wing. No sleep last night. It's very hard for me to think. What'd you say?
I say, what is it you want?
Oh, I'm looking for Dr. Mayfield.
I'm Dr. Mayfield.
Oh, well, I'm very pleased to meet you. Terrible thing. Young girl like that.
She was my nurse, you know. What was it, robbery?
We're not sure of anything yet. That's really the reason I came up to see you, Doctor. I thought maybe you could be some help to us.
In what way?
Well, since you were close to her, Miss Martin, I thought maybe you could tell us something about her personal life.
Oh. Well, then you think it wasn't robbery.
Doctor, I don't rule anything out. I just want to get a complete picture.
Do you think when Columbo walked into this office for the first time, he was already on the trail of Mayfield?
I think after about 5 seconds of talking to him, he absolutely was.
Okay, because he plays it off like he's just looking for directions.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think actually, doesn't he say right after that he is, do you know a Mayfield or something? I think he was looking for him.
Yeah, I think he's looking for both Heidemann and Mayfield.
Right, I guess a better way. Sorry, I guess a better way to put it is, do you think he suspected Mayfield before he met him? Or
no, I think as soon as he started talking to him, though, he started to zero in.
Yeah.
Because there's just a real vibe. Even though he's playing it pretty straight, there's just a weird vibe of, like, there's something off about you.
Where was I? Oh, Dr. Heidemann, yeah. I wanted to see him, but I found out he just had an operation.
Oh,
so
thanks for reminding me. I should be checking on him. He's my patient, you know.
You must be a terrific surgeon.
Well, Dr. Heidemann and I do share a mutual respect.
Oh, that? Oh, yeah, he must think you're very good. No, actually, Doctor, I was referring to your great concentration.
Well, how is that, Lieutenant?
Well, when I came in, you see, you were getting the news of your nurse's death on the phone. I could see you were terribly upset. But while you were on the phone, you reset your desk clock.
Well, I failed to see the virtue in that.
Oh, you're too modest, Doc. No, most people, they'd be in such a state of shock, they'd never be able to split their concentration like that. The way you did, setting your clock there.
Well, it must have been a purely reflexive reaction. I really don't remember doing it. Would you excuse me?
Oh, sure, yeah. Sorry I detained you.
Not at all.
Is there a coffee machine on this floor?
No.
You know, he is just so aggressive about redirecting attention through the entire episode.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly going out of his way to steer the interests of the authorities away from him.
Yep.
To the point that you can't help but to be suspicious.
And that's, you know, again, that is a trademark of some of these killers on this show. But in particular, I think he's going about it in such a cold and like feelingless way that immediately Columbo's like, there's just something not right here. I gotta pursue this. The other thing we have to pursue, other than talking, or, you know, Heidemann gets the news about the other nurse dying. And then there's this other nurse who does not work at this hospital, but is roommates with the other nurse. This nurse is named Marcia, played by Nita Talbot, who is a veteran television actress of this era. And this is another trademark kind of thing. Columbo has to talk to a person who is just not that helpful for a while.
Just can't believe it. We were so close. I mean, of course, in a lot of ways, you know, we were far apart.
How is that?
Well, I mean, I've always been inner directed and she was other directed, you know what I mean?
Well, not
I'm
really.
I'm career oriented. Sharon was motivated by others' wishes, you understand? I had personal, selfish goals, and Sharon was devoted to humanity. Do you follow?
Well, I'm beginning to get some of the drift.
Excuse me, Lieutenant.
Yeah. You were both nurses, is that right?
Yes, but Sharon always was devoted to healing. She always worked in hospitals. Myself, I work in Beverly Hills for a plastic surgeon because I selfishly enjoy being with middle to upper middle class people. However, I don't meet any single men unless they're ready for facelifts.
Could you tell me a little bit more about your roommate?
Well, I just know that Sharon never did anything to harm anyone.
No idea why anyone would come into this apartment and tear it up like this?
No, no idea.
This woman is lovely, but she does not really have a whole lot going on.
Now, I assume the show is always set in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Okay.
There are a couple where he travels. There's one where he goes to, like, the UK and solves a UK mystery, but generally they're all in LA.
Like, they don't get too Hollywood with it here.
No.
Like, she mentions working at, like, is it a plastic surgery clinic?
Yes, it's plastic surgery.
But specifically in Beverly Hills, but I'm sure other episodes veer into this way more, but here they don't get too, you know, like Tinseltown, movie stars, film industry.
Yeah.
Like this kind of feels like just any, the upper crust of any city for the most part.
There's a little, I think there's a little at the Nimoy party where the people are like talking about all their like, yeah. I had this work yeah. done and I had the, you know.
Yeah. I bet there are like city councilors there at least. But yeah, they do, some of the episodes definitely dig into like Hollywood stars and starlets and, you know, various film industry people. There's a great one with John Cassavetes, who is a composer that kills somebody. And there's a big climactic moment at, I think, the Hollywood Bowl where he is like performing like music scores and stuff. They definitely delve into that, but it's basically any walk of life that would be powerful in Los Angeles.
I don't know why it struck me during this party how old this is now. It's really just very depressing to me.
So this is, 53
this
years?
Is over, this is over, this episode is over half a century old now.
Yep.
Like, that's just hard for me to wrap my head around for some reason that the 70s was over 50 years ago.
Well, I mean, I think part of it is the fact that, again, this is the decade before I was born and the decade you guys were born in.
Yeah, that's all it is. I mean, this is
it feels familiar in that way.
It's somewhat solipsistic, I guess, for me to even bring this up, frankly, for people watching or listening to this who are younger than us and don't give a shit, but like, it's just hard for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff is probably the stuff that we were growing, the decor we were growing up around.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But
my grandparents' house wasn't this. It wasn't this opulence, but it had similar kinds of furniture. It looked more like the apartment, I would say, that the nurses live in.
I think the biggest thing in this episode that really was like, oh my gosh, this is ancient, was I think it was the ambulance in the beginning, the wagon.
Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh, right. Yeah, I guess they didn't have like the truck style ambulance with all the high back on it. I think he's just in like the back of a, like almost a long wagon, like Ecto-1.
Yeah, it's a Ghostbusters. Well,
it's a Ghostbusters car, but also the nurses' uniforms are pretty old style too. They've got the hats and everything.
Yeah.
Hats are sick.
Yeah. I did always enjoy that style of nurse uniform. I always thought it was just like very cheerful in a way.
Yeah. Now it's all just like Silent Hill references, right?
No, pure antiseptic bullshit.
Yeah. I really admire the chutzpah of coming to question your suspect and making yourself a whole plate.
Oh yeah.
While you're there.
I mean, they offered, you know, I think the person at the door is like, you know, help yourself or whatever. And Columbo is one to help himself.
We did
just chowing down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good spread.
Now, real quick, before we delve into this, which is really the first time where I feel like we get a good Nimoy Columbo tete-a-tete. They do find something at the apartment when they are searching. Specifically, they find a pair of morphine bottles taped to the toilet that the roommate did not know was there. Now, it's not hard to imagine, even though you don't actually see him do it, that Nimoy taped those there as part of his setup. Now, the question I have for you guys is, when they dust the bottles for the prints and they don't find any, did you discern that the way that Columbo did, or do you just think, huh, okay, no prints?
how did he discern it? I mean, the only thing I thought of, like, this is, we're dealing with some kind of smooth operator who was able to think ahead enough to not leave prints, but.
Well, the comment he makes, there's a comment he makes to Nimoy later, which is that it don't make a lot of sense, you know, because if you're a drug addict and you're in there tossing the place looking for drugs, why are you thinking to put on gloves?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of leaps of logic on Columbo's part in this that didn't fully land with me, and that was one of them, because, like, yeah, you don't know how savvy a given drug addict might be.
Yeah.
There are a lot of very high-functioning addicts out there.
Well, and the other thing is that, like, she didn't put any prints on them either, which means that she was thinking ahead to wear gloves only, which, like, why would she do that?
That is a way more... like that's a way more plausible thing to intuit, I think, is like, why are there not, it's not why didn't the perpetrator leave prints, it's why are there no prints on this?
Yeah. Like there's no sense in there being no prints on those bottles unless someone put them there for a reason.
Yeah. It was that and the clock thing at the very beginning when he first meets Mayfield and he basically like all but says he's guilty because he was setting a clock when he got the news on the phone.
I genuinely think that's the thing that tipped him off initially.
Sure. I mean, it's enough for maybe to make you suspect something, but I don't know. It's maybe a little bit tenuous to me.
Yeah.
I mean, tenuous connections that turn into things is the bread and butter of this show. Like, that's his thing, is finding the tenuous connections and then working backward to make them concrete.
Sure.
But yes, this garden party is delightful. We get a little life. See, what is Mayfield's life like? He seems very like a social butterfly. Bit of a climber, turtleneck enthusiast. He's got a nice place. It's not the most opulent one you'll ever see on this show, but man, the view is really something.
Yeah, he's used, you get the sense that he is used to and wants the finer things.
The finer things, and he's also used to deference, I feel like, because when Columbo starts kind of needling at him, you get the sense that this is not something he is ever accustomed to dealing with. I mean, no one's accustomed to dealing with Columbo, but yes, he makes himself a very nice plate of food and just starts chowing down as he begins to question Mayfield about a couple of things.
We went to Miss Martin's apartment, as I told you. It was not only torn up, but we found two bottles of morphine. They were hidden there in the bathroom under the wash basin.
What do you make of it?
Looks like someone knew she had drugs and wanted them pretty bad.
Lieutenant, Sharon was one of the most devoted nurses I ever knew. Are you inferring that she was mixed up in drugs in some way?
I know what you mean. It shook me too, a woman like that. But you never know, Doc, you just don't know. I mean, today, everything's up for grabs. You don't know who's involved in what today, the best people. Terrible. By the way, did she ever mention to you the name of a man named, named Mac?
Mac. I don't think so. Why?
Well, in the laboratory, by the telephone, we found this. That's her handwriting. It looks like she had an appointment to meet a man named Mac this morning.
I'm afraid I never heard of him. You think this Mac is what? Maybe an addict?
Don't know, Doc.
And this is where we get the, he found the note, the MAC meet at 8 o'clock.
Yep. And they don't know what Mac is. Seemingly, I guess Nimoy doesn't either, but like Columbo definitely doesn't. And that note is a little bit of a loose end, but I don't get the impression that Nimoy is that worried about it initially.
No. And this is why I think, I don't know if Nimoy's character has put together, this is what she was writing down when she was on the phone. I just think.
No. I think he knows it was about something that was happening with him and it might involve something bad for him. But other than that, he's not specific.
Right. I don't think he realizes he has a loose thread dangling here.
Yeah. Now, here's where he really fucks up, because this is not the kind of behavior a like disaffected doctor who like is only vaguely upset about his nurse dying would do. What he does is he calls up the roommate specifically because Columbo mentions that the roommate, you know, didn't know about the drugs being stored there. You know, it was sort of like, I think this is where he starts asking about like boyfriends and things like that. There is the mention of her doing like volunteer work with veterans, I think. And so he brings the roommate to the fucking, I guess like the Santa Monica Pier and starts grilling her, looking for a potential scapegoat.
Could it have been someone that she dated?
No, she never really dated that much. I used to try to fix her up once in a while, but she was really totally introverted.
Unfortunately, I didn't know too much about her personal life, except that she lived very quietly and did some kind of volunteer work at a drug clinic, I think, or something like that.
Right, for veterans.
Veterans? Marcia, you might have hit on something very important.
Oh, I hope so.
Was there anybody in particular? Did you know any of the people that she worked with?
No, not really. I only met a few of them.
Any particular one? Maybe a patient?
Wait a minute. There was a guy out there she used to see. What was his name?
Now, Sharon used to talk about somebody named Harry.
Harry. Harry, yes, that was it. Harry Alexander.
Oh, Marcia, Marcia. I think you've come up with something very important.
I hope so.
You should go to the police about it.
Okay. What would you like to do now?
I think we ought to take you home.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, he's way out of his skis at this point, of course, but I mean, it seems consistent at least. Like, this guy just repeatedly shows himself to be way too aggressive about trying to tie up loose ends.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, with the initial murder, it's kind of the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and like here, and then with, what's his name, Harry later, Anderson?
Yeah.
Like, just time after time, like, he really goes after things that he thinks he can't let go.
Like, too hard and too fast.
Yeah.
And so Nimoy has a general idea that this Harry is someone, right? Just needs her to put the pieces together.
Because she's been to the hospital. Like, that dude has been to the hospital because they were briefly dating.
Yeah, because it's very hard sometimes to tell what, you know, he's trying to, what Mayfeld is trying to manipulate somebody into coming to, or genuinely asking, like, a question. Like, it's a Harry something, right? Like,
yeah.
Harry, also, does she want to date him?
I think that lady is a little out to lunch in general.
Okay, because there's a bit at the end there and be like, well, what do we do now? And he's like, I'm just going to take you home. Why?
Like, I mean, if a wealthy, handsome cardiologist wants to take you out, I could see her maybe being like, oh, maybe this guy's cool.
At least we'll get dinner.
Yeah, no.
No.
Now, I do think the way he manipulates and leads her a little bit is you know, fairly effective. But also, again, he's not thinking this through more than a couple of steps because he doesn't think it's weird that he's like, great, we remembered that. I'm going to take you home now.
Yeah. It's kind of his undoing.
Yeah.
It really kind of cements the, like, because it's immediately after that, that Columbo is in the picture again, right?
Yeah. Because he shows up at her apartment waiting for her, and he sees Nimoy drop her off. And that's it. Like, I think at that moment, that's when he knows for sure that's, this is my killer. Because why the fuck is he bringing this woman home from anywhere?
Yeah, and we get a little bit of, you know, comedy bit here with the seven sips, you know, counter.
Look, this is TV movie length. Occasionally there are little bits in these episodes, and especially in the ones that are longer than this, there are some that are like 96 minutes instead of 75. They will let bits go. There are some bits that really go on this show for a while.
This was fun.
Yeah, no, this is fine. This is a couple of minutes of just fucking around. That's fine.
You know what it also does? It clears this woman of any guilt in my mind. She just seems like a nice person who is just like a friend. You know, at first
she's a little bit of a doofus. That's the worst thing you can say about her.
Right. A little, like you said, a little spacey, but like, she just seems like, you know, cause she's immediately like, oh no, he was with me. It was Mayfeld suggested it. And like, oh, she's not trying to cover up anything. She's not trying to hide anything.
No, I think that if he wanted to involve her in this whole process, he probably needed to do more legwork than he was willing to do. Because now it is just wildly suspicious. So, Heidemann is back in the hospital. He's still recovering. We know something's up with the sutures, but no one else really does at this point. And the second Columbo starts trying to talk to him, Mayfield immediately walks in and shuts that shit down.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like beyond parody at this point, how aggressive he is about coming, you know, coming in his patient's room, like, get out of here, don't talk to him.
My patient is supposed to be resting. You should not be bothering him. Please, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's take you out of the room. And now you can harass me.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's probably way more obvious to people who have watched all of these. But like, if as a first time viewer, like, I really didn't know how to take how much they slow roll or underplay Columbo's suspicion, you know,
Like, this is par for the course.
Yeah. Like, but again, like, without the context, you're kind of going to yourself like, does he fully suspect this guy? Like, you know. His detachment is pretty like forward.
Yeah, I would say it's fairly rare to feel like Columbo genuinely doesn't have a read on the main antagonist of an episode. Like, there are a couple where it feels like he does not come to it until very late. But by and large, it usually, you can sense that he is zeroing in on them very quickly.
Yeah, or maybe it's less how much he suspects internally and more how little he's putting the screws to the suspect.
Yeah.
Until very late.
Well, and the other thing, though, is that, like, he's trying to lead them into screwing up themselves and not force their hands. And in the case of Mayfield in particular, Mayfield is very not above just killing more random people if it will get him out of stuff.
Yeah, man. This guy is, like, approaching, like, serial killer territory.
Yeah. Most murderers on the show don't get more than one body. So this is a rare one. And the other body in this case is the poor veteran that that Sharon at one point was briefly dating, doing her volunteer work. He's an ex-drug addict. He now works at what I guess is a petting zoo?
Seemed like a petting zoo. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel bad for this guy. It seemed like he really cleaned up his life, you know?
Totally. Like, he seems like a genuinely nice, you know, like thoughtful guy. And the performance here by Jared Martin, I think, is pretty good. There's not a lot for this character to do in the episode other than die in a pretty spectacular way. But, you know, you get the sense of like, oh, I understand why this lady would like him. Also, Jared Martin, of note, specifically, I mean, he was mostly a TV actor, did a little bit of film acting, but he was the lead on a 1977 show called The Fantastic Journey. And it's notable for two reasons. One, it was one of the shows that DC Fontana worked on after Star Trek. And it was also directed by Bruce Lansbury, who we've been mentioning Murder, She Wrote. That is the brother of Angela Lansbury.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But so those are, you know, those are the connections there. But, you know, this guy is just like, he seems pretty bummed. I mean, they hadn't dated in a long time, but like he seemed to harbor no ill will toward her. And obviously this man would not have killed her.
No, he actually seems a little broken up.
Yeah, I think Columbo believes him, too. Like, I don't think there's much feeling out here, really.
Why'd you stop seeing him?
She said that we were close because of my dependency on her. Like, she was my doctor, and it was bad for me, and it was replacing one crutch of another crutch, so she broke it off. I never would have. She was a beautiful person.
You have any idea who might have killed her over drugs?
No. Why don't you check with the VA? Maybe she was still working there.
I checked with them. After you left, she quit.
Look, Lieutenant, like I told you, I'm clean. If my boss ever finds out that I've ever even been near that stuff, I mean ever, he's just kissed the job goodbye.
You know a Dr. Mayfield?
Yeah, I met him once or twice at the hospital.
Anybody ever call you Mac?
No.
I didn't think so. Thank you.
Now, this is the darkness. This is the moment when Nimoy is just like, all right, that's it. I'm just going to kill anyone and everyone in my way. Because he finds Columbo back at his lab, and Columbo has been digging through the trash, looking at various papers, kind of skulking around in a way that clearly makes him very uncomfortable. And also, he seems to kind of get the sense that, like, Columbo is not following the leads that he has been laying him down for him.
I thought you'd be busy arresting that addict boyfriend of Sharon Martin's.
Oh, you're right, Doc. I did go out to see the guy, but he seemed clean, claimed he broke the habit. Says he hasn't even seen Sharon Martin in 6 months.
And you believe them?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I believe him.
I'm not a policeman, but I can't imagine that you'd dismiss a suspect like him just because he claimed he hadn't seen her.
Yeah, that's true. But I'll tell you, I'm finding it hard to believe that her murder had anything to do with drugs. I mean, you have those glove prints on a murder weapon, and I'll tell you, the more I speak to people around here, people like yourself, the more I find it hard to believe that she's the type of woman to get involved in that kind of thing at all.
What about the evidence? Those bottles in her apartment.
That looks funny, then. I've been thinking about that. The only answer I can come up with is that maybe somebody put him there to make it look like that's why she was killed. Is this the cabinet where you kept those drug bottles?
Yes, that's it.
You besides yourself, who else had access to this cabinet?
As far as I know, no one has access to that cabinet outside of myself and Dr. Heidemann.
Hmm.
Are you insinuating that I put those bottles in her apartment?
No, I was just...
Lieutenant, I had no motive for killing her.
Oh, you're right about that. No motive at all. No.
Yeah, and I think it's explicit at this point, right? This is in the... When they're talking to each other in the lab, and he's like...
Yeah.
He's like, look, I didn't kill her. Like, oh, no, no. Of course you wouldn't. Why would you?
How could you have?
You couldn't have. You have no motive. There's no motive. No motive. Yep. No motive.
This all leads to another profound 70s-ism to me, like another an artifact of a less paranoid society, that the guy's window is just unlocked and you can just slide it open and there's just a single doorknob lock to unlock to get in.
I'm going to say, even by the era standards, that's pretty irresponsible to do at a low-rent apartment building in the middle of Los Angeles.
Like the idea of at least not also having a deadbolt, let alone the window being locked.
Yeah,
I feel like most of the windows I've been in and when I've been at hotels like this don't open. They have like that post on the inside that stopped them from sliding.
Yeah. Not this time, no. This is the easiest break-in you have ever seen in your life. And he waits for our poor veteran to come back and gives him the bad juice.
Yeah, highly premeditated.
Yeah, this guy, Nimoy's character sucks.
He's a real asshole.
Real piece of shit.
He's a monster. He's not an asshole. He is a murderer.
I say it again. He is bad even by the standards of murderers on this show.
Because not only does he try to, I assume, get this guy to try and overdose on morphine, who is an ex-addict who has cleaned up. So even if he, comes to and like he is now, this guy, this recovering addict, has been injected with morphine. It doesn't work. He doesn't initially OD, and this guy dies during a fucking nod down the steps.
It's a psychobilly freak out.
Yeah, the jam on the camera is a little
it works. No, that's what's happening inside like every fucking talking computer on Star Trek.
Poor stunt guy and his slow motion tumble down the stairs.
Yeah.
It doesn't look fatal, but.
But I think the morphine is what actually takes him. Like, I think the fall is, I think the fall is him just falling unconscious. Mm. I think the morphine is what kills him.
Okay. You think he did have enough to actually OD?
Yeah. He just didn't do it right away.
No. This is getting interesting for me as a first time viewer at this point, although with this only becomes more true the closer we get to the end, but I think it started right around this point. That I started looking at the time left in the episode going like, how's this going to play out? Because we don't have a lot of time 20 left.
Minutes. There's like 20 minutes left total.
We don't have a lot of time left. And Columbo hasn't even like expressed his suspicion very directly to the suspect yet or really at all. Like it just, I was like, are we going to see an arrest? Are we going to see certainly not a trial with 15 minutes left,
No.
Like any kind of like legal process. Like anyway, we'll get to it. But I was just like, I was a little confused about like how much they were going to show or how this was going to play out at this point.
No, I would say by and large, the way episodes end is with the murderer getting got. But sometimes that's being led away in cuffs. Sometimes that's literally just their face going slack in front of Columbo. And that's the end of it.
Which is kind of how this ends, not to skip to the end. But like, there's still quite a bit crammed in at the end here before the guy gets caught.
The prestige is always the last bit of the episode, and there's never really much follow-up after that.
Okay.
One minor detail I do want to mention briefly, because they never really linger on it or say anything about it, but he still has a photo of the nurse in his apartment.
Aww.
It's still up on his, mantle.
Aww.
So, I think he was not fully over her. Well, they're together in heaven now.
Well, he fell head over heels.
Yeah, he did.
But again, sloppy Nimoy.
Yeah.
Didn't do his homework.
Nope. The man is left-handed. And a left-handed man probably wouldn't shoot in his left arm unless he was already fucked up.
That's a good point.
But that's the kind of thing you wouldn't know unless you knew the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with Nimoy is that the only murder it seems like he was maybe going to get away with is the guy he knew really well.
Yeah.
And how to get to him.
And who hasn't actually died yet.
Yep. Now, I think, what was it? Like, Columbo comes back and tells him about the guy dying and, you know, finding the needle. And he tells him about the left arm thing. And this is, and then he goes to see Heidemann again.
Yeah, well, and then this is where Nimoy for the first time, Mayfield for the first time, verbalizes the idea that he could have killed her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or he just comes out and says, like, why would I kill her?
Only two people knew about Alexander. Marcia and me.
That's true.
Maybe Marcia knows more than she's telling.
Well, actually, I think she knows less than she's telling.
I have a lecture. You'll have to excuse me.
Oh.
Lieutenant, what possible reason could I have for killing her?
You ask tough questions, Doc.
So does the jury.
Oh, is this the, like, so does the jury?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though Columbo doesn't even directly accuse him. He's just talking about inconsistencies and the way Harry died and stuff. And then Mayfield just comes out of nowhere and says, what reason would I have to kill her?
I think, here's the thing. I don't think that was smart necessarily on his part, but I think he's smart enough to realize that, like, Columbo would not keep coming back to talk to him unless there was a real suspicion there.
Yeah, like, all I mean is this is where it starts becoming explicit between them.
Yes. Like, the facade mostly drops not long after this.
Right. Especially because this is where he figures out the Mac puzzle.
Yes.
The Mac puzzle.
Now, when he goes to talk to Heidemann again, does not get very far because, again, he's basically, Heidemann's going back in for surgery soon, though that is not on the schedule. He's going to make it so he has to go back into surgery. Now, there's a brief bit, another, talk about your Columbo bits. There's the part where he is watching the colon surgery very briefly.
Yeah.
And this is where he learns the linchpin in the whole case. The sutures.
Well, in this operation, they're using dissolving suture as opposed to the permanent kind.
I see. Permanent.
Yeah, suture you use when you want something to stay permanently.
There are different kinds than permanent?
Yeah, dissolving kind. Of course, it's a different color and a different texture.
Dissolving?
Yeah. It's made to hold for a few days, and then it just dissolves away.
You mean it just goes away into nothing?
Yeah, in a few days, or when the wound heals, or when its use is over.
Is there any time in a heart valve operation that you shouldn't use dissolving sutures?
We should never use it in a heart valve. You see, when the suture dissolves, then the valve would separate.
What was that?
When the suture would dissolve, why, that the valve would separate.
I see. And how long after the operation would it take for the valve to separate?
Oh, normally a couple of weeks. But in the case of a heart valve job, why, the pressure would make the suture give way in a matter of days.
I see. Matter of days.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
Yes. Matter of days.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, this is where it finally kind of connected for me. Like, I'm not going to say this episode was fully landing for me until right around the time that Harry dies.
Mm-hmm.
But this last act, kind of everything after he falls down the stairs, the whole suture thing and the cat and mouse and everything is actually where it gets kind of fun.
And I think it comes to its information, honestly, and pretty naturally. It doesn't feel like it's trying to jam the solution into the end of the episode. And yes, after he learns about the sutures, that's it. Like, you can see the light bulb go off in his head, and he immediately goes and confronts Mayfield. And you see a very rare instance of Columbo straight up snapping at the killer before he's got him.
Yeah.
I'll bet somebody could take some dye or something and color one to make it look like the other. I mean, you could fix it up so that no one would know the difference.
That would be murder, wouldn't it, Lieutenant?
Yes, yes. Yes, it certainly would, sure. Because that would explain why Miss Martin was so bothered after the operation, and it would explain why she wanted to see the chemist at the company that made the suture. That's murder. That certainly is, no question about it. What's so funny?
Excuse me, Lieutenant. I had to play it as though you were serious. You don't really believe all those foolish things you say, do you?
I believe you killed Sharon Martin. And I believe you're trying to kill Dr. Heidemann.
I Lieutenant Columbo, you're remarkable. You have intelligence. You have perception. You have great tenacity. You've got everything except proof.
I want you to take good care of Dr. Heidemann, because if he dies, we're going to have an autopsy, aren't we? I mean, we're going to have to know whether a heart attack killed him or whether it was just dissolving suture.
He does not do this very often.
Okay. Yeah, this is not... This seemed atypical even to me.
But before right before we get to that, though, I love the sequence of him following Mayfield down the hall and into the elevator mm-hmm. and everything, where he just keeps babbling about sutures.
Yep.
Like, he does a pretty good job of playing it off as if he is actually just like, it's almost childlike. Like, he's just very easily amused by new information about sutures. Mm-hmm. Like, he finds sutures fascinating and he can't wait to tell the first doctor he sees about how fascinating the different types of sutures are. You know, obviously in reality he's taunting, or not taunting, but he's like,
yeah,
he's baiting the suspect.
He's digging
maneuvering him, you know, into a corner. But the way it's like, I think that's where the Columbo routine like finally fully clicked for me.
Yeah.
Of like, he's really just comes off as a hapless goofball, but there's a method to it.
Well, and so one of the fun things about Falk in particular is that a lot of the little asides and foibles are ad-libbed by him. Like, the way he sometimes guides the dialogue through is specifically designed to throw the actor he's playing the scene with a little bit off too, so that they are playing like the confusion more real.
All right.
So in this case, I don't know how much of this he was ad-libbing, but in some of those other scenes, you can definitely get the sense that like some of the actors are like, I'm just gonna let Peter do his thing and then I'm gonna find my way in here.
I mean, this is like in the middle of that suture conversation, like Nimoy is like, what exactly is your point, Lieutenant?
Uh-huh.
He's like, I'm not sure I have one. And then he just goes right back to babbling again.
Yep. But that's the beauty of the character, right? Is that you love watching him do this stuff.
Yeah, this is where it got pretty funny. I forget who it was that said Monk was kind of like the spiritual heir.
In a way,
to the Columbo thing. Like, I fully get that now here.
Like, just make Monk make Columbo neurotic. Like, right. That's really what it is.
I think the only Nimoy part here that breaks a little bit for me is when he does this laugh that just does not. I mean, I think the character himself is forcing a laugh, but it just seems like
it's just too illogical.
It's too like, I'm laughing. Ha 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 ha. Just doesn't make sense.
Leonard Nimoy is not a real Vulcan. He does laugh.
Yeah, right. But yeah, this is what, and then Columbo, what, he slams,
smacks the desk.
Yeah. I think he killed it.
The abject hatred he has for this man is a rarity, and it plays very well. And it makes the surgery scene very tense because
tense.
So what Mayfield has done is he has given Heidemann a shot that produces symptoms like if the valve was malfunctioning, because what he wants to do is go in there, get the sutures he put in before, take them out and replace them so that none are the wiser.
He's been made.
He knows he's been made. But if there are no sutures and there's no evidence, they can't pin it on him. So Columbo's there. He's watching the surgery. And everybody's kind of eyeballing him, though I don't think anyone else really knows that like Mayfield is under suspicion. And it seems like the surgery goes without a hitch, though Columbo comes storming in at the end and is like, I want to look around. I want to try and find these sutures. Doesn't work.
Also pretty intense. Like, this seems like a big ask.
Like, they toss the whole OR. He has to bring other doctors in to help search because they understand what they're looking for.
Yep.
Like, it seems like maybe this is a superior at the end who's like kind of dressing him down a little bit after they've searched the OR and couldn't find anything.
He's not really dressing him down. He's just kind of saying, like, because that's the detective who he met at the beginning who was there with the body.
Yeah, maybe it's not dressing down so much as just like, hey, we kind of went out on a limb for you here.
Yeah.
And nothing.
And that does happen a few times in this series where, like, Columbo will seem like he's gotten a little too far ahead of where he needs to be. But inevitably, Columbo gets his man.
So I did think after this tossing the OR and after Nimoy's leaving, they do the shot where, like, Nimoy, like, rubs the side of his head. I totally thought they were going to be in his hair. I really thought the sutures were in his hair.
Because
they really focus very conspicuously on that.
Yeah.
This is like some close-up magic shit, though, because I think they are really trying to guide the audience away from the actual thing that happened here.
Mm-hmm.
So Obviously, they can't find the sutures. Mayfield is very self-satisfied. And Columbo seems like he's about to skulk off into the night, you know, defeated.
You look a little dismayed, Lieutenant. Now, if it's not asking too much, do you mind if I continue with my day's work?
It certainly looks like it's one on me, doesn't it? You know, I really believed it all fit together. All the pieces, everything, the killing of the nurse, everything. Well, it goes to show you, Doc. Maybe I've been at this job too long. Okay. You win. You're finally rid of me.
You'll be all right, Lieutenant. I'm sure you'll find others to harass.
So long, Doc.
And the breath that Mayfield lets out at the very end, it's like, it really is amazing how it's just like, oh, I did it. Crash, here he comes again.
You know, in a way, I have to congratulate you. Up until now, you really had me going. I mean, here you are, you're a surgeon, a man that's gotta be cool. Even when you're angry, you're controlled, you never lose yourself. That's why it struck me funny when you blew up in the operating room and you grabbed me and pushed me. I mean, you know, there was only one thing we didn't search. You know what it was?
One thing.
just one more thing.
Doesn't even knock. He just barges right back in.
Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, he has figured it out. He has figured out where the sutures went. And it's not the most elegant thing he could have done, but at the same time, I understand why he wouldn't have thought of it right away. Because during the OR confrontation, at one point, Mayfield kind of grabs Columbo and shoves him a little bit. And when he did that, he shoved the sutures into the pocket of Columbo's OR scrubs.
Seems like a risky gambit.
Yeah. I mean, he's out of choices.
He's got nothing else to do.
Got nothing else.
I thought of one other thing.
Okay.
He could have hidden these inside of Heidemann.
Oh.
Oh, I wonder what the complications around that would be.
I don't know. I would think none.
Well, they were a lot of eyeballs on it.
Yeah, I mean, yes. That's assuming he could pull it off without anybody noticing or whatever, but I feel like if he could have sewn them back up inside the guy...
Right, they would have dissolved.
Probably would have been okay.
Yeah. Hard to do again when everybody's eyeballing
you,
though.
Yeah, but yes. Sure.
But yeah, if it wasn't for those sutures, he would have gotten away with it.
Pesky sutures. And then crashed to the end of the episode.
Yep.
Like literally just directed by titles right on his face, holding up the sutures. Like there's zero fat at the end.
Nope. Just you get to see the crestfallen face on Leonard Nimoy, Columbo's self-satisfaction, and that is it.
Yeah. It was a little jarring at the end.
This is one of the most abrupt ones. Like they're all a little abrupt, but this was one of the most abrupt ones. That said. I really like this episode, mostly because Nimoy is again, even in the annals of murderers on the show, he is a special kind of shithead that does not crop up in the show very often.
Yeah, he's really evil.
He's very evil. You think on our fantasy playing out of the rest of this episode, did they find that he did the other murders?
Yeah, do they though? I mean, they had nothing on him.
I've watched a decent amount of Law and Order now. Yeah. It always seems like something comes up. Admissible evidence, and
as of now, they didn't have anything on him on these other murders.
But you know what? Now that they have the evidence that he did attempted murder, what they can do is they can search his office and his home and all that stuff, and they can probably find like the morphine he used to kill the veteran, and you know there might be other things that they can use to tie him to the other murder.
They mentioned glove smudges at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they can
find
tie,
those gloves.
Maybe they find those gloves and tie them to the smudges.
I will say glove-based murders in L.A. are traditionally somewhat difficult to prosecute, from what I remember.
Fair,
wow,
fair.
Nice.
Or maybe he only goes down for the attempted murder, but they throw the book at him.
Yeah.
Or maybe they plea something for the...
bargain out?
Yeah, for something. I don't know.
Either way...
Yeah, he's toast.
Leonard Nimoy is toast. This character is toast. And Leonard Nimoy is not one of the repeat return murderers for this show. This is his only episode.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah. There's two Shatner episodes.
Oh, but he's playing the same character in both. That's the thing I didn't realize. I assumed he came back as a different character.
He came back as a different character.
Oh, he did?
He does. Yeah. No, there's never the same murderer, but I'm saying
that's
like,
what I meant.
There's
I
multiple did, repeat actors yeah, that play different murderers.
Repeat actors, I definitely yeah. believe. I thought you meant there were recurring characters, which
no.
is a different thing.
No, the only recurring characters are some of the police characters and a guy that runs a chili restaurant that Columbo really likes.
Like, I thought you were maybe building up to like there were like it was kind of a nemesis character that keeps getting away or something.
Nope. Nothing like that. Every single Columbo is a self-contained experience.
Hmm.
And I think that's part of what I love about this show so much.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I came to enjoy it by the end.
I think this is an interesting first one to watch because it is a little meaner than some of the other Columbos tend to be. Like, it's a little less goofy with like the playing back and forth with him and the murderer, because the murderer in this case has no sense of humor whatsoever.
What was the expression? How am I going to get you? Not a whodunit.
It was a how catch him, not a whodunit.
How catch him. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, whatever Nimoy lacks in like mirthfulness or whatever, I feel like he kind of makes up for in with brazenness.
Yeah,
totally. It's a good mystery. I think the next one we're going to do is maybe a little bit better and maybe a little more indicative of the overall tone of General Columbo.
I am very excited to see William Shatner play a murderer.
Oh yeah.
Assuming he is the murderer. I mean,
oh yeah. Definitely. He's the murderer in both the episodes he appears in.
It's like not a big secret, you know, on the list of Columbo episodes Wikipedia page, there is full on a column by like, right next to directed by and written by, there is murderer played by.
Yes.
Like, it's not exactly some big secret.
No, I mean, again, that's the whole point of the show, is that they are not trying to hide the murderer from you. They are trying to hide how Columbo is going to get there.
Right, right. Like I liked Nimoy in this. He was very effective, but like, Shatner is a whole different category of chewing scenery.
And I remember him and Falk having very good chemistry together, yeah. Especially in this one. Like, I think the 90s one he's in is good too, but Fade Into Murder, the season 6 premiere, is a great one. I don't want to say a whole lot about what happens in it, but let's just say maybe William Shatner is an actor
who plays a
TV detective.
Like, the fade in part sounds pretty.
Hmm.
Hollywoody.
Yep. And I'm not going to spoil this for you. Try not to read anything about this episode between now and next time, but there is another Star Trek cameo in this episode.
Oh, huh. Okay.
Oh, other than Shatner?
Other than Shatner.
Is it from original season?
From original series.
Okay.
I will not spoil it. It's a minor thing. It's really only one scene, but I just want you guys to experience it for yourselves.
Okay. Right.
But that's going to do it, I think, for A Stitch in Crime.
This is a side note of a side note of a side note, but aside from just enjoying this episode that took place in the 70s, this inspired me to do something else.
Oh,
it's carpet
tub.
What's that?
Carpet tub.
No.
Okay.
I bought a physical old rotary phone.
Oh, fuck yeah.
All right.
Because I was like, I saw all these, there's a lot of phone calls in this episode. And I'm like, man, I just miss the weight of an old receiver on a phone.
There's a lot of metal in those things.
Yeah.
Or in the base more than the...
Yeah, you know, you pick it up by the back and walk around with it, or like the weight of a receiver. And I still like talking on a phone, so I bought an old phone.
You can't get them. Surely they don't make new ones anymore, right?
I mean, why would I spend that money when there's like thousands?
But also those things will last 1,000 years if you keep them in good condition. I mentioned earlier the bits that sometimes go on very long when they are like, then they have the full 90 minute runtime. There's one episode in particular I remember where Columbo is dialing a rotary phone, and you can tell, you feel him dialing all 10 digits of that number in a way that is beyond anything I've ever seen on network television before.
Oh, great.
I mean, that's all people knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to Fade Into Murder next week. But for now, I think we're going to wrap this one up. As always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who has been listening, watching, and Columboing with us at home. We'll see you next time.